Ron Krotozinski, professor of law and director of faculty research at the University of Alabama School of Law. Good morning, and thanks for joining us, Ron.
Good to be here.
I don't know if you know this or not, and I don't mean to catch you flat-footed because that's not what you came on for, but do you know how many levels or degrees of separation there are between the president actually ordering a nuclear attack and it occurring?
I do not. I know there's a series of protocols that require verification of an order, but in terms of the exact process through which an order of that sort would be implemented, that's beyond my pay grade, I'm afraid.
Well, okay, and I did catch you flat-footed with that, and we're going to talk to Major Mike Lyons, our CBS military analyst, in the next half hour, so I'm sure he'll have answers for that. But what if, at any way along that line, or maybe with a different issue, for example, the president tweeting about transgender issues and some pushback from the Joint Chiefs of Staff on that, what if anybody down the chain of command decides not to carry out an order because they think either it's a bad order by the officer above them, or they just think morally it's wrong?
Well, there's an easy answer and there's a more complex answer.
I'll take them both, Ron.
All right. Well, the easy answer is the Constitution in Article, the U.S. Constitution in Article 2 provides, among other things, the president shall be commander-in-chief. And since the Washington administration, that language has been understood to give the president more or less unlimited tactical and strategic control over the armed forces of the United States. And so it's not even up to Congress to decide whether the president can make tactical and strategic decisions. But at the same time, the Constitution constrains government power in fairly comprehensive ways, a First Amendment, a due process clause. And we haven't really seen a court case where a president attempted to do something that was blatantly unconstitutional through the military chain of command. I think if you ask your military consultant, you know, if the president gave an order to fire all of the Jewish members of the armed forces or all the Catholic members of the armed forces, would you implement it? I suspect he would tell you in a hypothetical, yes. But if such an order actually came down, I'm very skeptical that the chain of command would implement it. And I don't think the courts would necessarily intervene in the president's favor if the order were blatantly unconstitutional. And so you mentioned two different hypotheticals. One was a military order about a strike in North Korea. The other was the transgender order. I think those might have different outcomes. I think a tactical decision to defend the national security interests of the United States is something that the president probably would win, even if it seemed misguided or ill-considered. I think the military chain of command would implement an arguably lawful order from the president. On the other hand, the transgender order, as strange as it may seem, strikes me as a harder case simply because I'm not sure that's constitutional. There's an equal protection principle. It probably protects people who are transgender. We don't have a Supreme Court precedent on point just yet, but we will soon, I think, this term, in fact. And, if an order is patently unconstitutional, I think the military would probably resist that order because if they're sued, they will lose. Even the military is subject to the Constitution. It applies more lightly than, say, to a school or a university, but it still applies.
Does the transgender issue, Ron, all boil down to should transgender people, should gay people, lesbian, I don't know, it's the LBG, I always mess that up, but that they should be a protected class, or are they constitutionally, should they be or entitled to be a protected class, or would somehow be discriminated against? Boy, you think I asked a long question before. I guess bottom line is, like, people that are of a certain religion or gender or whatever the protected classes are in the nation now.
That's exactly it. There are two ways, actually, with transgender framing it. One would be the LGBTQ framing device, but you could see it as just a form of sex discrimination, right? And if you treat it as sex discrimination, then heightened scrutiny already applies under the court's precedence on discrimination primarily against women, but it protects, the Equal Protection Clause protects men too. But I think it might even be easier than that. As I understand it, the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the heads of the various divisions of the military did not ask for this transgender order, and there are a couple thousand transgender people serving in the armed forces without incident. Israel, Canada, all the Western Europe, Germany, France, they all have transgender people serving. There's no evidence that I'm aware of that suggests that they present any risk to the good order and discipline of the armed forces. And you can't just discriminate against someone because you don't like them. Equal protection, there's a case called Marino involving hippies getting food stamps in the 70s. Fun facts, huh? And the court said when Congress tried to take the food stamps away from these hippies living in communes, that you can't just hate on people. That if the idea is you just don't like people and you want to pile on, that's not what's called a legitimate government interest. And even under the most forgiving standard of constitutional review, rationality review, the Supreme Court has held more than once that animus toward a group simply because you don't like them is irrational. So if the military got behind the Trump administration and said, "Oh God, these transgender people, they're making it really tough for us. They're interfering with our ability to fight. They're reducing our military capacities." The courts would totally defer to that, I think, because they apply the Constitution with a light hand in the context of the military and also prisons. But because the Joint Chiefs have said we're fine with this, and because, as far as I know, there's no evidence to suggest there's a problem, in fact, if anything, replacing a couple thousand people on short notice probably interferes with the good order, discipline, and readiness of the military more than leaving them where they are. I'm not a military person. You should ask your military consultant. But I think that the constitutionality of that is in some serious doubt. I mean, you've got Orrin Hatch saying, you know, we shouldn't hate these people. He's not exactly a liberal.
In terms of going back to a military order and the Constitution and the order being disobeyed and not, action not being taken, if any president, not this one, were to say for whatever reason, Germany is crippling us economically, so I'm going to order a preemptive nuclear launch against Germany, where would the Constitution fit into that?
Well, technically, the Congress has the power to declare war, and I did say strategic, and I should probably clarify that. The president's scope of authority as commander-in-chief is clearest with respect to tactical decisions that have to be made in real time to protect the military and national security and national interests of the U.S., the Tripoli pirates and Jefferson, for example. If you're talking about taking a million people into war across the Atlantic Ocean, that's more clearly a decision that Congress probably ought to have to sign off on as well. Congress has the power to declare war. The president doesn't. But what you're talking about, I think, would probably be a tactical decision, a real-time decision. And in that case, I think that's probably the president's call as a commander-in-chief. That said, you know, a military commander could decline to implement the order, and, you know, the president wouldn't have that person shot. The president would remove that person from the chain of command and try to find someone who would implement the order. So I think the way it would play out would look something like Truman and MacArthur on the Korean Peninsula in the early 50s, where Truman told MacArthur to stand down. MacArthur refused to implement that order, continued offensive military operations on the Korean Peninsula, and Truman ultimately fired him. So I think the president's option would be to remove a general in the chain of command or a lower officer who refused to implement an order. And the question would then be, can the president find someone who will turn the key and push the button? And that's an interesting question. Depending on the facts and the circumstances, the theory is that the military will always obey the chain of command. The chain of command is unbreakable. But like all rules, there are always going to be some exceptions, even if the military is unable to acknowledge them. And if the president gave a totally, totally insane order, I'm very skeptical that the Defense Department would implement it. But we generally haven't had to worry about a president who would make an insane order, right? I mean, you think about the presidents we've had during our lifetime, we might disagree about their judgment here or there, but we would not presume that they were making a completely bad faith judgment. So, I mean, that's a premise that we haven't had to think about, and the military hasn't had to think about.
And the only thing I would say to be fair, we've had, you know, some tweets, some emotional tweets from the president. My own personal opinion, and nobody really knows, is that I would have to believe that he If he's mentally sound, and again, I think he is, there's been no evidence to the contrary, as stated by a doctor or anything, but I think when it came to that, he would look at it more seriously, but I guess nobody ever knows about any president till it happens. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.